as an investor, if you know that you haven't met that income threshold or that net worth threshold, and you get something that says a 506c offering, you should know that I can't invest in this.
If you're interested in how highly successful investors overcome limitations and become unstoppable forces of success, you're in the right place. The Conscious Investor Podcast features weekly conversations with real estate investing experts and delivers a Monday Mindset episode to help launch your week with intention. If you believe success is for everyone willing to think, then do, these conversations will be your weekly rocket fuel. Conscious Investor, welcome back. We're so excited, so excited to have a good friend of mine to provide some legal guidance, right? Isn't that what we all need in life? We want to know, well, what would the attorneys say? Well, there are a lot of different types of attorneys out there, and finding a specialist, just like we bring on tax specialists, right, for real estate, it's really important to have a real estate specific attorney at your side so that you can understand things. And so today I'm so excited to have my good friend Kyle with me to answer a ton of questions that are going to help you really sort through, like, what is that PPM? Should I do a syndication? Should I joint venture? What is this whole 506B, 506C? Why aren't they advertising? Like, we want to really clear the air on all of that. And I love it when I can invite expert friends on the show who have all the credentials and the authority so I can cover my own behind. You know what I mean? So anyhow, Kyle, thanks so much for joining us on The Conscious Investor.
Absolutely, Julie. Thank you for having me. And, you know, before we get going, I wanted to say thank you for having me. I know that there's a handful of commercial real estate attorneys out there, particularly that overlap in the securities commercial real estate space. And it means a lot that you would have me. I trust that when you're editing this, you'll help out with my monotone Southern accent. That would be greatly appreciated, possibly for your viewers as well.
Well, I think it's going to be great. I think earlier you were sipping maybe some sweet tea, so you're sticking to the Southern roots, and I appreciate that.
There you go. Thank you.
That is awesome. Let's not hesitate. Let's dive in, because I mean, you and I are friends, so we've spoken, and I know that we can get into the weeds, and that can really support the conscious investor. And that's what we're here to do. So why don't we jump on in and just talk about, hey, when should I be syndicating? When should I participate in a syndication? Or is this just something that's more of a joint venture I'm going to do instead?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's actually kind of a common question that will come from either passive investors or sponsors, particularly from the investor side. Why is this a syndication? Why aren't we just signing an operating agreement, for example? And the sponsor may say, I haven't syndicated before. What's the difference between a syndication and the joint venture? In the past, I've invested in a deal with three of my coworkers or family members, something along those lines. And really what it comes down to is the definition of a security in and of itself is largely a group of individuals or a person, but a group of individuals that receive a financial benefit based off the work of someone else. So essentially what that means is if you have a group of people that are entirely passive and don't have a managerial role, and they're receiving either distributions or proceeds of any kind from the finances of an underlying property or investment, then that's a security. So that's where the line is drawn. It's not necessarily the amount of investors, it's not necessarily the amount that is needed to be pulled together. In theory, if you, for example, were raising money and two other people wanted to get in, but they were going to have no managerial roles at all, in theory, that's a security. And that's kind of where you start seeing the syndication line. Now, that doesn't mean, for example, that someone can still have a managerial role, but not have a large of an ownership interest, right? Like something like a 40-20 or something like that. That 20% individual may just regularly get outvoted, but they're still participating in the management by giving that, right? So that's still a difference that you can have. But at the end of the day, that's where you get into the distinction is, am I offering a security or not? And if you are, that's where you go to the syndication route.
That could be a little complex, right? We're driving it. We just woke up. We're on the treadmill listening to this. So let's put that into some like practical, tangible form. So let's just say that you and I, our families are like, great, we're going to go and we're going to buy a 50 unit complex together. And then we have another friend that we're going to bring in. And that other friend, they're just bringing money. They're like, you know what, man, you're a great attorney. You're a fantastic real estate investor. Like, do your thing, grow my money in the process, please. And we're like, yeah, sure, we'll do that. So now, because that person, I'm just trying to give this like some shape, right? Mm-hmm. Let's talk about it from that angle with that example. Are we dealing with the security? Or are we dealing with something like,
right. I think at that point, you're dealing with the security, and it's not even really so much the friend investor, if you will, and what's different between him and the family members. Really, what it comes down to are you and I running the show to the extent that everyone else is not a part of it. So it's kind of like, I've heard this example before where a syndication is a lot like a plane, right? You need the pilots to fly it and you need the passengers to kind of support it, right? So without the passengers, what's the purpose of the pilot? And without the pilot, the passengers can't go anywhere. That's the same kind of role you see in the syndication space. Like the sponsors, the pilots are driving the plane, the management of the property, right? And the passengers are paying for the services of that, or they're funding the investment to receive the benefit in part of some sort of distribution of cash flow. So you can't really have one without the other. So if the family members and the friend in that example are coming in and they're investing and they're not going to have that active role, they're really just passive. Maybe they'll get newsletters, quarterly returns and whatnot, but they're not going to have a vote as to whether we're going to refi or sell or implement a renovation plan sooner or later, how much we're going to increase rents, if we increase rents at all. That's going to be where you've issued a security and you would have syndicated at that point, or you should have syndicated at that point.
Not a joint venture. My wonderful conscious investor, many of you are also passive investors and you are enjoying the passive income and growing your investment portfolio in a passive way. And so this is definitely speaking to you. You are the passenger on the plane. And so you are investing in a security. But we could switch that and we could say, what if they want to be active? They want to be hands-on. How hands-on do they need to be? Again, we found this great 50-unit complex. They want to bring some money, but they also have some insight. They know some contractors in the market or something. Like, how active is active? What's the bare minimum?
Mm-hmm. I would say it kind of depends on how that underlying GP team runs its management style, right? So any sort of GP team that I've ever seen, there's 100% ownership of a managerial company one way or another. And that gets divvied up based on maybe capital that was brought or resources that were brought or just general business acumen and knowledge in this space. And if they know contractors that would, but for them, would have charged a lot higher, that's worth something. Now, what is that worth? I don't know. That's up for the GP team to decide. But that's kind of what I was getting to earlier, is even if that member has a 5% stake in the management side, he still needs to actively participate. So actively participating would be maybe getting on the monthly call, all of the GP members reviewing the income statement for the month that was prepared by the property manager or whatever software you're using. I don't know. But reviewing the finances, understanding what's going on, determining, having a say in whether or not we're going to renovate, refi, issue distribution. You might not issue distributions because you want to otherwise take that money and renovate additional units that became available to increase cash flow down the line. That may be a reason why a distribution has not happened in quarter two, for example. They should vote on that as to whether or not that's something they want to do. And again, there's nothing wrong with them being outvoted, but you want to make sure that they are still participating. So I would say at a minimum, they should be on some sort of monthly call where the finances have been discussed, quarterly, if that's kind of how the GP team decides that they're going to run it. But if I were an investor, I would want to know that the management was speaking at least once a month and not once a quarter. You can miss a lot in March if you've let January and February go by the wayside. So that would be the answer that I would give, is still having that oversight, not necessarily in the full day to day. That's what your property manager is for, right? But understanding how many leases are about to come up for month to month. They should know that because they were on a call that discussed that. So little items like that, something that a manager would know, whether they're 5% holder, 75% holder.
Nice. So just to go down a little deeper. So, I mean, we've really talked about securities, syndication. Are there any nuances to the joint venture realm especially I can see on the horizon, I can see a lot of joint venture opportunities taking place by nature of where just the economy is headed, even if it's just to buy a business. Like there's so many things, right, that people are going to get together in order to improve their investment portfolios. Let's just speak just a little bit more. Anything else that we need to know on joint ventures?
Like in the commercial real estate investing space, I guess what I would say is you can kind of start to tell when you're going above and beyond the joint venture. And what I mean by that is five people getting together, contributing equal amounts of money to purchase a quadplex or 8-unit building, that's fine. But if someone said, well, I'm going to bring this and I have a buddy that nobody else knows and he doesn't really want to be too much a part of it. Well, now you're kind of like, okay, well, is that the right capital that we want? Because then it's getting a lot more passive instead of actively being managed by the group. And if he has an equal stake and none of us know him, one of the concerns I would have is that that's just going to be a voting block of one person kind of controlling that to possibly outvote the rest of us. And if he doesn't like the way that we're managing it because he doesn't know us and hasn't had a pre-existing relationship with us, what if he just wants to sell off his interests and create a stink in that regard, right? So there's a couple of thoughts that come to mind when I hear that scenario. But if it's a couple of people that are coming together for the purposes of purchasing an apartment complex and they're all going to run it together, that's fine. But once you start saying, okay, well, what about 12 of us? Do you need 12 people to manage an apartment complex? I highly doubt it. What are 12 people actively managing? I doubt that much. So, okay, well, what if it's 10? What if it's 15? You're probably getting into that space where there's a handful of people doing a lot more of the work than others. And you're kind of running into that. It's kind of a quasi-security. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. And then I would take your facts and present them to your attorney and kind of outline, this is what's going on, or this is the plan that we have. What are your thoughts on that? Because a lot of times it's hard to give a bright line rule. How do you define a relationship? How do you define what's enough in terms of the activity? But that's going to be on a case-by-case basis.
That's good to know. And that gives some good parameters even in and of itself. So switching gears a little bit, every new investor I engage is always like, I don't know, this whole 506BC thing. I'm always explaining this. And you know what, conscious investor, I am happy to explain it. And today I'm happy to have this on recording. I will probably pull this excerpt out from this just so that we can put it out there and make it really easy for everyone to understand the nuances. So let's talk about that. How did we even get to, because 506B and 506C, that's even beneath a whole other layer. So can we kind of peel this onion back?
Yeah, sure. So the reason why, at a larger view, as to why we have this B or C concept is because the Securities and Exchange Commission really wanted to make sure that people weren't being taken advantage of. They didn't want people out there sending out mail to people and raising capital, one, and stealing it, or two, investing it into high risk situations without adequately disclosing what could happen. So maybe in decades ago, you had people that were just raising capital from all sorts of individuals, and they were buying a piece of land that they were going to develop into some sort of railroad way. I don't know, whatever would have happened in the 20s prior to the 1933 and 34 acts, right? And you would have had a lot of situations where people wouldn't have known what the risks associated with that were, any local ordinances or any kind of city and state specific items. They might have been getting money across state lines, and people might have just wanted to invest in that next thing, right? Prior to that, probably would have been post-gold rush, where people were trying to look for get-rich schemes, and they really wanted to start implementing some rules. Okay, you're not allowed to do this anymore. We want to protect people, one, from themselves, but also from scams or frauds, right? Mm-hmm. Swindlers, as I call them. So what they decided was, you can do this in one of two ways. You can either do this with people with whom you have a pre-existing relationship, people that you know, whether they're family or friends, or you can do this where it's only accredited investors that have the money at their disposal. And if they lost it, it's not a significant hit to them. Meaning if they have money of that level and capital ready to deploy, then they're presumed to understand the risks involved with this type of real estate investment or whatever the investment is. Actually, it could be crypto mining for all that it matters nowadays. But that's kind of where the SEC and the federal government wanted to come in and protect the investor. These 506B rules and these 506C rules were not designed to protect the sponsors. They were designed to protect the investors to make sure that nobody was investing in something and didn't know exactly what they were investing into. So that's why you see this B and C. So you see the B because with the B, and I look at it as the 506B is for both accredited and non-accredited investors. With C, it's only for accredited, right? So that's where that C kind of comes in. But when you have a 506B from the sponsor level, it's only people with whom you have a pre-existing relationship with, neighbors, family member, friends, college, work colleagues that you know. You should know a lot about that specific investor, right? Because you should work with them or go to school with them or they're in your family and you just know a lot about them. Obviously, you can still have as many accredited as you want. But again, the distinction is that you have that pre-existing relationship with them. And with the 506B, you're not allowed to advertise or generally solicit it. The reason why you're not allowed to advertise it is because you can't guarantee that advertisement is going to someone that you have a pre-existing relationship with. Sometimes I'll get asked, well, I'm only friends on Facebook with people that I'm friends with. Okay, sure. But like all of your friends on Facebook, probably these days, I think most people have at least 500 Facebook friends, right? Maybe more. I don't know. But can you adequately say in good faith that you know the financial circumstances of all of those people, the level of education of all of those individuals, what's going on in their family, what their investment tastes are for? Do they like cash flow? Do they like passive losses, like equity upside? You couldn't convince me that you know all of that just from your Facebook friends, right? So that's why this pre-existing relationship is a lot smaller of a circle than it seems, right? And I'd actually kind of like to read a quote from a previous SEC guidance posting just real quick. I'm pulling it up now.
No, that's great.
And I can provide the site for this afterwards, but this is the quote. We recognize there may be particular instances where issuers may develop pre-existing substantive relationships with offerees. However, in the absence of a prior business relationship or a recognized legal duty to the offerees, it is likely more difficult for an issuer to establish a pre-existing substantive relationship, especially when contemplated or engaged over the internet. Issuers would have to consider not only whether they have some sufficient information about the particular offeree, but also whether, in fact, use that information appropriately to evaluate the financial circumstances and the sophistication of the offerees prior to commencing the offering. So basically, what that's getting at is a lot of times in this digital space, there's a lot of Zoom networking meetups, LinkedIn communities, Facebook communities about commercial real estate investing. And if you've never really had conversations, meaningful conversations with these people, it's going to be incredibly difficult for you to say that that was a pre-existing relationship with, outside of some general posts and knowing that someone's in that space and knowing that someone's looking to deploy capital. Do you know their occupation? Do you know maybe their spouse's or partner's occupation? Do you know they currently invest in maybe a summer vacation home, or they have other property in their portfolio or anything about them? Probably not. That's the information that you want to get. So obviously, you should know what a pre-existing relationship is. Now, how can you get a pre-existing relationship? As you continue to grow and meet new people, how can you start saying, okay, I think I've met this substantive relationship test? This may be a little bit overkill, maybe, but what I recommend to people is send in your website or at least general information about you and say, would you like to schedule a call? And when you schedule that call, the first call should be entirely about them. What do you do? What does your spouse do? What are your investment objectives? Do you want mailbox money? Do you need passive losses? Because maybe you're doing a conversion from a hotel to multifamily and they could really use that passive loss to offset another gain somewhere for tax purposes. Are you less concerned with getting quarterly or annually distributions because you want to have high equity upside? What's your risk tolerance, right? Do you like commercial real estate in terms of self-storage facilities or apartment complexes? Like, where do you like to find, like, what's your grounding in terms of what are your investment objectives, right? I would have an entire conversation with them about that. I would take notes. I would email those notes to me just so that I can always have it like separate folder, new relationship development folder, something like that. And then I'd email them a follow-up following day. Hey, I really enjoyed speaking with you where I found out that you're a doctor and your wife is an accountant and things along those lines, what your objective goals are. If you'd like to, I'd like to schedule a follow-up call where you can find out more about me, right? And then they have that call and you say, well, here at Sky High Capital, we invest in multifamily apartment complexes. The reason we like that is it's a hedge against inflation. It offers passive income. And whatever your reasonings are, of which there are several, less volatility than the stock market for sure, appreciation, whatever, you know.
Keep going. I love this.
No, you're right. This is what we do. And when we invest in these deals and we use people like you to be a part of that, after what I've said, is this something you'd be interested in? Of course, they probably say yes. And then the next time that you have an offering, you can say, hey, I know that when we last spoke, you would be interested in investing in apartment complexes or self-storage facilities or retail. Here's something that I've got going on. Is this something that you would be interested in? And then that's where you've developed that substantial relationship, right? You've met them, you found out everything that you need to know about them, what you do, and moving forward. And when you think about it, you should probably know from your college friends what their occupations are. You're probably in their wedding, so you know what their spouses do. So you're kind of learning about this new investor, what you already know with the investor's network that you have. So that's how that you form that substantial relationship ahead of time. With a 506C, you don't have to do any of that. You can advertise it on any internet mean that you want to, social media means. You can emblazon it across the heavens if you wish. I'd actually like to see that. We have an offer right there, right there amongst the clouds. But you can advertise it in any way. You can solicit it in any way as long as they're accredited. To be accredited, you would have to have $200,000 in income the previous 2 years with the reasonable expectation of that repeating in the third year, or $300,000 if married, or you could have $1 million net worth excluding your primary residence, which makes sense because they don't want people just taking out money on their house to do this. But even if you did, that debt would go against your net worth anyways, right? So $1 million net worth. And then there are certain entities that can be accredited investors, entities that are comprised solely of accredited investors, or entities that I believe have $5 million or more in assets. You see that in trusts a lot. So those are the full list. Well, not the full list, but that's where you normally see your accredited investor status. And you could Google what the other options are, but that's typically where you see. So in the 506C, you have to validate that accreditation status. That can either be from a letter with a CPA, that could be a letter from someone's attorney. You can have any one of several thousand verification companies out there where the investor sends them their previous tax returns or their investment portfolio so that they can determine, yep, they're accredited. You don't have to do that in a B. And the reason why is because you're presumed to have this pre-existing relationship. You should be able to determine if they say they're accredited, then they are. That doesn't mean that they are. But from your perspective, you've done everything you can to reasonably rely on that self-accreditation. So that's usually the difference. That's the differences that you see in the B and the C. And as an investor, if you know that you haven't met that income threshold or that net worth threshold, and you get something that says a 506C offering, you should know that I can't invest in this. And then if you're non-accredited, you should be specifically looking for 506B.
What's interesting, gosh, that's so much rich information and I appreciate it so much. And I think you could guzzle the sweet tea right now. So, I think also when I'm hearing this for you passive investors that are listening, this is why it's imperative that you are taking action. So giving a call, scheduling that appointment with Three Keys Investments and other companies that you're interested, doesn't mean that you, twofold, it doesn't mean that you are choosing to invest with them. It just means that you're choosing to open the gate to opportunity. And second of all, it doesn't mean that you will be received as an investor. And I'm just going to put that out there. It is always a two-way street, because companies are like Three Keys Investments are always vetting what kind of investor is this? Does this investor meet the culture? Does it meet the minimum thresholds for our investor community that we are establishing? So it's not just necessarily, oh, well, I have this call and I can invest with anyone. There is an approval process on the other side of things also. And some companies will have a more formal approval process or application process than others. So keep that in mind. And then also one more side note for you passive investors. I'm giving you a break, Kyle, for just a moment. No problem. Oftentimes, newer syndicators will start out and they will have 506B offerings. And as they become more established, I'm just going to say it, cold, hard facts. The truth about it is far easier to be working with accredited investors. It's far easier to be able to advertise. You have fewer investors in a deal. Everything is easier. And so you will see people as they gain experience, they will offer fewer and fewer. And then sometimes it goes to zero 506B offerings. Mm-hmm. And so when you find that,
if I may,
yeah, please do.
They will still only offer 506C offerings, but their network is entirely comprised. You know, they only go to people with whom they have a pre-existing relationship, but they still do the C anyways, because and whether they advertise it or not, just because everyone's accredited. So even mm-hmm. if they get to a point where they really have a tight investor network and they have a great relationship with all of them and could have done a B anyways, they still do the C, just because it is a little easier from a risk disclosure perspective as well.
Mm, definitely. So it's important for you, conscious investor, to consider what your investment goals are. And if your goals are to grow your net worth through real estate, passive real estate investments, you want to make sure if you are not accredited, especially if you're not accredited, that you are having those conversations with teams that you'd like to invest in, and then just ride the elevator on up with everybody. There's my soapbox on that. I have a question for you. And this is like, I always have a curious question. And so the curious question is, why didn't we know about this before? A lot of passive investors will say, this is so weird. Like, I've never heard about this. I didn't know that this was a thing. And I'm going to be full transparency. I've said like there are lots of regulations around this. Those regulations have changed over the years. And this used to basically be the country club type conversation versus the everybody conversation. So I'm being very transparent. That's how I've fielded that in the past. You may have a better way of more insight into why do people know more about these investment opportunities in real estate now versus 15 years ago.
That's a good question. It could have been in part because people only thought of investing in terms of a 401k or pension with their company, and they didn't think about passive income as much. They were on that 9-to-5, retire at 55, 60, 65, whatever it would have been. And then, you know, just get on to Social Security or whatever their investments would have been over the course of their lifetime. I think a lot of reason, that's just the passive investor side of it. I think another reason that you didn't see a lot of these until the explosion of syndications probably over the last 20 or so years is because sponsors probably weren't aware that they could do it, right? Several sponsors, just like I do, that were teachers or nurses, highway patrolmen. I'm trying to think of all the clients that I have. Not many were just out of big four accounting or major financing companies at hedge funds on Wall Street that decided to go and do their own thing. A lot of people probably realized that they could get in this space and network from there. So I think people always thought the only property that I can afford is something in Monopoly or something like that. And I think when people realized that when doing it legally, they can pull funds from multiple sources, that's when you really started seeing syndications happen far more prevalently. I would really like to know the number of apartment complexes, just apartment complexes, that are purchased in 2022 that were not syndications. I bet you it's very small. And even an institutional fund would have probably had some sort of regulatory oversight anyways, and kind of how that investment vehicle was constructed. So even that's a syndication in and of itself, probably. I don't want to blanket statement that, but there's not a lot of, outside of just a purely kind of institutional level investor, there's not a lot of people that are purchasing apartment complexes and not syndicating it. Maybe somebody is 1031-ing money in, like maybe they have $1 million worth of 1031 and they're using that as half of the payment and debt servicing the rest of it. So I'm sure there's some percentage of that, but most of the time it's probably three people teaming up to acquire something smaller, or they're syndicating it. I don't know how we got here, but I think it was a culmination of American psyche wanting to retire earlier and having different sources of income streams, and then sponsors recognizing that they could be the vehicle to make that happen. And then when you factor all of that in together, you kind of saw this explosion of syndications.
And I'll add to that a third element, the explosion of YouTube podcasts, information
for sure
being disseminated that made it accessible. I think that may have been a little bit of fire starter on that.
Yeah, I would agree with that, because a lot of people might not have known about a person in New York City, for example, that is raising a lot of money through syndications, if they were, I don't know, in Montana, or if they were in Arkansas, they wouldn't have really had access to that person in any way. But once you had the internet and people able to let people know who we are, who they are, I should say, that was probably the biggest part of it. Whatever issues you may have with social media, that there are certainly its pitfalls, but that would have been a major explosion in the syndication space, the ability to do that, for sure. That's a good point.
Yeah, interesting. My LinkedIn. Well, and you added the social media. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. It's just like, There we go. Mm-hmm. Wonderful bonfire. And I'm so grateful that we have access to this information, that people can make these choices. Mm-hmm. Kyle, I hate to wrap up. It's the worst part of every episode when I have to be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe we have to start winding things down. But is there anything that you're like, I just want to touch on this or circle back to a point along the way?
I think if you're a passive investor, you want to be in communication with the sponsor that you know, just in terms of staying in touch, making sure that you know what's going on. Now, that sponsor is probably giving out newsletters of some kind, either monthly or quarterly or whatever basis, but you should familiar yourself as well with this space. So when they say pref return, you know what that means. When they say cash flow splits and IRR, you know what that means. That's an internal rate of return, and that's a metric by which you know what your money's going to do for you. If you're a sponsor, you should really remember the fact that you're doing this for your investors first, not for yourself. You can see a lot of times, and I've even had this conversation with sophisticated capital raisers out of California, where they only want to do deals with sophisticated sponsors because there may be a lot of sponsors out there that aren't properly underwriting a property. They aren't properly aware of the population and the market trends in that area. They just know that they got something under contract. And if they close on the property, they're going to get a 3% acquisition fee of the purchase price. And all they're doing is running out a mill of syndications. And you could have invested in a good property anyways, or you could have invested in something that was a poor investment and they've got their acquisition fee and they told you about the risk and you're kind of stuck at the end of the day. So just to the passive investors out there, you should really take the time to get to know the sponsor. What are their objectives? What drives them? What they care about? Because you want to make sure that you're investing with people that you trust and know that are educated in this space. So I just kind of wanted to say that. Be mindful of, I can only think of a hand. I don't even know any bad apples per se, but that exists in this world, unfortunately. And it's really important that not only do you understand the information surrounding commercial real estate investing, but you also really know who your sponsor is and what they're about, so that you have that relationship and bond and trust.
Wow. Thank you. I unintentionally just gave me a segue to say, if you're curious about how we choose our partners, I go about it. Three Keys goes about choosing and selecting partners in a very interesting way. It's not the standard way because we believe in character and we believe in understanding exactly who somebody is before we partner. And so just touching on that high level, we don't partner with other people we've known less than 1 year. And we typically do a lot of content creation, breaking bread, understanding really what's motivating our fellow partners. So within a syndication for passive investors, and I get this question often, many passive investors will say, well, who are the other people in the deal? Okay, let me tell you, I know these people. And this is why I believe not just in the deal, because there are always going to be challenges. When challenges come, I'm confident that this is how these people will show up. Really powerful, really critical. I highly encourage you to go to 3keysinvestments.com/blog. And you can check out that 3-minute read on our very unique way of selecting our partners. I wasn't going to give that plug, but I mean, I was like, man, I got to give that plug. That rolls right in there.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. You definitely should.
Yes. Well, Kyle, you're awesome. I've already said you're a good friend, and I just love the insight that you offer to people, to investors, both on the passive and the active side.
Really, if you don't stop, I'm going to blush.
You're going to match the color of your sweet tea.
Exactly.
You're just as sweet as your sweet tea, you know?
No. Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, ma'am.
And smart. But how can people are listening to this, Conscious Investor is saying, hey, I want to connect up with Kyle. I'm looking at maybe going about my first passive investment, or more importantly, I'm thinking about maybe having my first syndication and I need a good syndication attorney. So best way to connect up with you.
Absolutely. So I am pretty prevalent with my use of LinkedIn. So you could absolutely follow me on LinkedIn, Kyle, K-Y-L-E, Swafford, S-W-A, F as in Frank, O-R, D as in David. Feel free to add me there and happy to make that connection. If you want to reach me by email, my email is Kyle, again, K-Y-L-E, at R-F, as in Frank, L-L-P, law.com. Kyle at R-F-L-L-P-law.com. That's short for Robinson Fransman. And you can reach me at my office number at 404-255-2503. 404-255-2503. And should you email me or perhaps leave a voicemail, if you could just reference this podcast so that I know kind of the context of how you found out about me or where you're coming from, because I might have presented somewhere else on a completely different topic and it would kind of help me remember, oh yeah, I remember that awesome podcast I had with Julie because she's amazing. And it would go a long way to kind of refreshing my memory. So I would appreciate that if you can remember to do that. But either way, feel free to reach out with any questions about your deal or any representation. Maybe you want somebody to, you know, review a syndication package for you. Definitely reach out.
If you are a passive investor, you can always have that whole package reviewed by another attorney. So just one more way.
And should.
Says the attorney. No kidding. I got to poke fun. And you should.
If it's your first deal, you absolutely should. You absolutely should. If you've done 2 or 3, maybe you can kind of figure out your way around it. But if it's your first deal and you feel overwhelmed by all the disclosures and there's an operating agreement and then there's a PPM and there's all this, you should definitely run it by an attorney just so that you can sleep well, kind of getting a professional's look at what you're getting into.
Have more confidence in that. So, Conscious Investor, if you are curious, there were some other topics that Kyle and I were contemplating discussing that would be more like, we could have Kyle back on the show. So I'm curious if you have other questions that are more on the legal side that you're like, Julie, just bring Kyle back. Send those questions, email those questions to, let's send them to julie@juliehawley.com, because that's really simple because you already know my name. Send them that direction. And if we collect a few questions, it doesn't take much. And one question could actually take an entire episode. So we'd love to have Kyle back on, love to support you in answering your questions along the way. We appreciate you so much for joining us for this episode. And remember, if you haven't already had that phone call, that intake phone call with 3 Keys Investments, make sure you click down in the show notes so that you can start that call. It's not a commitment. It's just opening a door of opportunity for both of us. And hey, you might not like me and I might not like you. Okay. The door swings both ways. Until next time, Live big, love bigger. Overwhelmed by apartment syndication but want to learn more? Let me help you press the easy button. Head over to 3keysinvestments.com and download Syndication Made Simple. I explain simply how the process works, who's involved, and how you can get started today. You're smart, and with this simple guide, you'll be able to understand the process. Head over to 3keysinvestments.com and download Syndication Made Simple.